So, as I mentioned at the top of the show, our second guest this evening is Chrissy Duval, and she's just shown up in the studio. Hi, Chrissy.
Thank you so much for having me this evening.
Thanks for coming in. Kristen Duval is a researcher at the RCMP Canadian Police Centre for Missing and Exploited Children and Behavioural Sciences branch. Through her work, she is committed to supporting advances in research in the area of online child sexual exploitation. And Kristen has a Bachelor of Science degree and a Master's of Science degree and has previously worked in the RCMP's forensic labs. And then more specifically about child sexual exploitation, the presentation that you're going to be making at Yes Women Can on Sunday, the theme of your presentation is with the widespread usage of internet technology and social media, children in today's society have become more vulnerable to online child sexual exploitation and sexting. So Chrissy will talk to people attending that presentation about the risks and what they can do as parents to help keep their children safe. So I'm pretty sure it's going to be concerned parents are going to be attending.
I hope so.
Your presentation.
Yes, I hope so.
Yeah. So how big a problem is this, Chrissy? We're just saying before we turn on the mics that you don't think people really realize how extensive a problem this is?
No, unfortunately, it has become a very serious issue. It's happening in Canada, in our backyard, and in fact, all around the world. And the average person doesn't understand the true gravity of the situation. Mm. They don't understand that it is a very serious issue, and it is, in fact, very prevalent.
Really, eh? And are we talking here about, like predators like that are preying on young kids online?
Yes, yes, sexual offenders.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the big concern. Yeah, because, I mean, some of what we hear about, like, kids sexting each other and that kind of stuff, you know, like, already that's a little bit of concern and disturbing, you know, but when you add to that equation the fact that there's some kind of, adult that is preying and looking for opportunities to take advantage of a kid, then it gets really, really scary. So, mm-hmm. so what are some of the things that the parents need to be aware of in terms of, first of all, I guess, the kind of activities that make their kids vulnerable?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think parents need to be aware of what online activities their kids are involved in, what kind of social networking sites they're using, what kind of mobile applications they're using. And parents need to be aware and informed of these applications and also the risks that come with it. Mm-hmm. And by understanding the risks, then they'll be able to, in turn, help keep their kids safer online.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, as you probably know, technology has become very central in children and teens' lives, and this has just made them all the more vulnerable.
Yes, I guess. Yeah, for sure. I can remember back, of course, my kids came into the computer age, I guess, when they were maybe 8, 6, 8, 10. And back then, it was pretty straightforward. I mean, parents would say, don't let them have a computer in their bedrooms, you mm-hmm. know. Make mm-hmm. sure that the computer is in the kitchen or in the, you know, in the family office where, you know, you can keep an eye on it. And that becomes one of the standard practice. But things have changed so radically.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, now we have, smartphones in our pockets that have way more power than those old 286s and 386s
exactly.
used to have.
Exactly. Yeah. I think about 85% of students by grade 11 have their own cell phones.
Yeah.
So, you know, just about most students have access or their own phones, and rather than having to, you know, be in the family room with the computer where they have supervision, mm-hmm. they can now take these devices, mm-hmm. go into their bedrooms behind closed doors, and the supervision just isn't there.
Yeah, it disappears. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And by and large, do you think the smartphone or the cell phone is the biggest gateway for potential abuses or vulnerabilities?
I think so. Yeah. I think so for sure. Just because of, again,
it's portability.
Portability, access, just about all students have them once they get into high school. There's so many cell phone applications that can be used, which again makes them more vulnerable. There's applications such as Facebook, Twitter. There's instant messaging applications that allow for instant communication with their peers.
Yeah.
But it also opens the gateways to offenders who can sneak in there and gain access to these victims.
Mm-hmm. So in the there's always sort of a balancing act, right? I mean, as a parent, you want your kids to be safe, obviously. You want them to, not to be in danger. On the other hand, we all want them to be self-expressed and, mm-hmm. and to not be deprived of the latest technology mm-hmm. and to be able to communicate with their friends and to have, you know, happy, normal lives, right? So I guess what parents need is a good evaluation or measure of what the risks are so that they can actually balance that thing, right? That mm-hmm. sounds like the job that you're taking on, right?
Absolutely, for sure. They need to be aware of what's going on and set boundaries, set rules and guidelines and share that information with their kids. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, most kids and teens are very tech savvy and yes. more so than their parents.
Yes.
So it makes it hard for parents to, you know, have those conversations with them and give them guidelines when the kids know more about it than they do.
Yes.
So that makes it very challenging.
So what do you advocate, Christy, in terms of a solution and an approach? I mean, you've just mentioned having the talk and ongoing, I suppose, in mm-hmm. terms of keeping your kids aware of the dangers, I suppose, and also establishing guidelines and but are there also sort of technical solutions that you encourage parents to take on in terms of monitoring cell phones or even putting safeguards on the software and the apps so that kids have a kind of safety net around them?
Mm-hmm. There are certainly those options, and a lot of that is a personal decision, whatever the parents feel is most appropriate in given situations. And there's all kinds of resources online that might be able to inform them and guide them in those respects.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you can set up settings on your internet browsers to make sure that they don't access inappropriate websites mm-hmm. and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to mention there's a great website, cybertip.ca, that I think everyone should be aware of. It's Canada's reporting center / tip line, where people can go on and report incidents of online child sexual exploitation. And they have come out with a great number of resources for parents, for teachers, for kids of all ages, for teens.
And who's this put up by?
Is this the Canadian government? Yes, it's a non-for-profit.
Oh, okay.
It's cybertip.ca.
Uh-huh.
And I highly recommend it. There's a lot of great resources there.
Ah.
And I would certainly direct parents to go on there and have a read.
And did you imply that there was a kind of reporting aspect to this site as well?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, so the public can go on.
Yeah.
If they're a victim of online child sexual exploitation uh-huh. or if they come across a website that is hosting child sexual abuse material, and they can report it through cybertip.ca.
Okay.
And then they will forward these reports to the appropriate law enforcement agency.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they've got a database going, I suppose, and as soon as something gets reported, they start comparing tips and that kind of thing. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. Well, we'll mention that again at the end of our interview. That's a good piece of information. So getting back to supporting parents, I guess, in this really complex task. As you mentioned, we're a lot less tech savvy than our kids. They can run circles around us, obviously. Same deal at the schools, right? I mean, for the most part, like the teachers, are trying to hang on to, they're mastering technology as much as they can. And often, many school boards, the response to cell phones infiltrating into the school has been to put up firewalls and basically block the signal, And
right.
I think that's sort of been reversed in a lot of cases, because, there's safety issues involved. I mean, we've heard mm-hmm. about kids down at VCI needing to call their parents and their phone is dead kind
sure.
of thing,
Yeah.
So it's, although maybe it might be tempting to come up with that draconian solution, it's just not practical, is it?
No.
So they really need to be educated and to be made aware of and to be given the tools, I guess, to mm-hmm. to manage themselves inside a protective context, I guess.
For sure.
Do you do any work with the schools?
A little bit. Because I work for the RCMP, it's outside of our jurisdiction. So typically it would be the OPP that would go in and inform the students and have talks with them.
Right, right. But are you ever brought in as an expert? Or
I have done a few talks at some of our local schools, yes.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was nice to see the students and engage with them and give them some information. And I think it's important that we have a very collaborative approach to tackling this issue because law enforcement is doing their part, and it's important that parents do their part, teachers, educators. We have good support from the private industry, non-for-profit, governmental organizations, and it's just such a huge problem that we can't do it on our own.
Yeah, and everybody has to participate.
Exactly.
When you made your presentations, what's the kind of thing that catches the students' attention from your experience? What are they looking for?
I think they're shocked, first of all, as to just how horrible of a situation is, how prevalent it is. They are surprised that there are these offenders out there that are looking for victims, and I think it kind of catches them by surprise.
And even though they've probably heard this before, right?
But
it's just kind of a boogeyman kind of story, right?
Exactly.
That you can just push out of the way. But when they're presented with some maybe real facts and figures, I bet you it really makes them sit up and take notice.
Eh? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think another thing that shocks them too is that a lot of them don't realize that sexting is actually illegal.
Mm-hmm.
When you distribute an image of a sexual image of someone else without their consent, that's in fact an illegal act.
Yeah.
There's a new law that just came into place where it makes it illegal to distribute an intimate image without that person's consent, and that just came about recently. But in the past as well, in those situations, teens were being charged with a child pornography offense.
Yes, so that's right. And so that would be a surprise to the students as well.
Yes, for sure. And I think they don't realize how easy it is to lose control once they hit that send button. Mm-hmm. That they feel like, for example, if they're in a relationship with someone, they feel secure that they can trust the other person. But if something happens, say they break up and they lose control, you know, there's nothing that they can do to stop the other person from distributing it.
Yeah.
And it can be quite scary.
And that image is out there and in the hands of other people that it might have been shared with. So it's not even that you maybe can't trust your ex-partner anymore, but there's you know, 20 or 30 or 40 people that might have been shared with, right? Mm-hmm. Like once it's out of the bag, it ain't going back in by itself.
That's right.
Yeah.
Children and teens need to be aware that they have to really think about what they're doing and what they're sharing, what they're posting online, because there's future impacts and implications with these decisions. And for example, employers these days, many people will check people's online profiles and find out what they're doing and try and get a true picture of these people and who they are and who they are potentially hiring.
Yes.
And when you're young, you don't realize that you're not looking that far into the future.
That's
and
true.
Thinking about that.
Yeah.
So little things that kids and teens need to be aware of.
You're building your brand.
Exactly.
At a really early age.
Yeah. Exactly.
So really the solution is that we, you know, that we engender in our kids that kind of sense of self and self respect and self-discipline as well, I guess.
Exactly.
So that they can actually steer their way through this, not by themselves, with support, obviously, but they need to be at the center of this, I think, don't they?
I think so, yeah.
And that's a skill that's going to have to evolve and get stronger, you know, in future generations for them to actually be able to survive in this environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really interesting.
Growing up, you're bound to make mistakes. It's all part of the process.
Yeah.
And I think parents need to make their kids understand that they will make mistakes and it's okay. And yes, they, you know, in certain situations you need to discipline them. But in this case, I think it's most important for parents to tell them that if they have put themselves in a situation or if they've come to, you know, get themselves in a position where they need help, then they can go to their parents.
Yeah.
That their parents need to make their kids understand that they can go to them for help.
No matter what it is.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
no matter how bad, they need to know that they can reach out to them for help.
Yeah. That's along the lines of parents sort of establishing the rule that, you know, if you've gone out to a party somewhere and you've had too much to drink, mm-hmm. you can always call and I'll show up and I'll pick you up. No questions asked.
Exactly.
You know, like don't ever take that into your own hands kind of thing and try to hide it.
Yeah. There'll be no judgment. There'll be, you know, I'm here for you and we'll get through this.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world. We'll push through and we'll get help and make things better.
Yeah. If we could step back and put a little bit more intentional design into how the internet has evolved, what do you think we could have done or should have done? And I'm not just being academic about it. I'm just wondering if this is going to have an influence in how things evolve in the future. I mean, do you think we sort of missed the boat in terms of allowing a kind of wild, wild west approach? I mean, it's one of the strengths of the internet is that it's so open source code. It's so open and sort of democratic, you know, and it's what people love about it. But did that go too far, do you think?
That's a really good question. Yes and no. I mean, I think you could answer it both ways. And the internet and technology has certainly offered many benefits.
Yes.
But again, I mean, knowing what I know just through my line of work, it's scary. It's really scary. Yeah. And sometimes I do think it's gone too far.
Hmm. Yeah. So if you could put controls in, where would you put them? What would you do?
Oh, I'd have to think about that one. But, you know, certainly I think there's...
I mean, if there's face recognition software, for example, certainly there can be software that can recognize sexting, for example. Mm-hmm. And can, I mean, could that be built into the backbone of the internet that just does not get communicated? It's just, you know, not be the kind of data that can flow freely on the internet. I wonder if that couldn't be, I mean, almost anything could be done, mm-hmm. you know, that would be something. I mean, what possible good? I mean, I guess possibly somebody might say, oh, well, these are medical, you know, medical images or something, but, you know, they would have to get special exemptions or something to communicate that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you just sort of think, you know, they should have. Or they could, and I imagine eventually that they're going to be, you know, infrastructures and safeguards, you know, slowly evolve, mm-hmm. hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think some of the companies that are coming out with these, smartphone applications and so on and so forth, social networking sites, I think they're all recognizing that there are risks for our youth and they're mm-hmm. coming out with safety measures and ways to help them be more secure online, which is great to see that, you know, everyone's doing their part and pitching in and realizing that, yes, okay, we have to take a step back and start putting things in place to help these young people.
And that can only happen when there's an adequate level of awareness of the problem. And mm-hmm. that's what your mission is and what you're planning on doing at Yes Women Can this weekend. And that's part of why we invited you, obviously. I mean, you have a very important message to deliver, but it's in the context of Yes Women Can taking place at the Community Center here in Bankleek Hill, April 19th. And I think, is your talk at 2 o'clock? Did that get that?
Yes, it is.
2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yes.
And it's going to be upstairs in the more quiet area of the community center.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's going to be lots of hustle and bustle and hubbub happening downstairs with all the vendors and everything. But it'll be...
I'll certainly be checking that out in the morning before my talk.
You will,
It's always a great event.
It is a good
event. The review does a great job.
Everybody is really hustling right now with the final stages of preparation for the event. Signs are being made. And okay, well, Chrissy, we're going to take just a little musical break here and then we're going to come back and wrap up our chat. But I just want to make sure that I didn't miss any important details. So we'll play a little instrumental and then we'll come back. And
sounds good. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. we're continuing our conversation with Chrissy Duval. Thanks again for coming in, Chrissy.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you have some incredible insights into this whole world. I think as parents, we'd rather not have to think about it too much, but it's really, really important, as you were saying, that we do actually pay attention and grab the bull by the horns and be proactive about what our kids are up to on the internet in general. And specifically, you were saying Facebook. That's a real gateway for information.
It is, for sure. And I think children and teens have that need for social acceptance. And unfortunately, a lot of social networking sites, including Facebook, put a lot of emphasis on sharing personal information and gaining acceptance from your peers, from your networks,
that's
for example.
Selling, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, you post a picture and you eagerly await for those likes and those come about. And I think, I mean, even for an adult, I think we can all agree on that. But it's even more so important for young people to get that acceptance.
So how do we counteract that, or at least have them aware of who to make that available to, or who to look for likes from, for example?
Well, it's very important that they only share that with their friends, with people that they know. And again, going back to needing that social acceptance, and I think young people feel the need to be popular, and they might equate a large network with popularity.
Yes.
So they might accept people into their social network that they don't know.
You were using the analogy earlier of think of having a party at your house, for example.
Exactly.
And would you invite total strangers to come into your house and be at your party?
Right.
They likely wouldn't, but yet they're willing to accept as a friend some person they don't know, because it's going to expand their circle of friends on Facebook.
Exactly. It's very easy for offenders, for anyone, to pretend to be someone else online.
Yes.
You never really know who you're talking to.
No.
And it's very easy for offenders to gain access to all this information. They can pretend to be, say, a student from a local school.
Yeah.
And, you know, what young person wouldn't want to accept this good-looking young man into their social network? And, you know, it just could be misleading. It could be someone else. It could be an adult, an offender. And by clicking that accept button, all of a sudden the offender has access to all kinds of personal information, images, pictures. Yeah. They know who their friends are.
Birth dates.
What they're up to. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They know, you know, some sort of schedule, where they like to hang out with, where they like to hang out. Yeah. And it just opens the floodgates there.
So what's the golden rule? Only friend people that you've actually met in person, for example?
I would definitely say so, yes.
Yeah.
Make sure you know the person and trust the person before letting them into their social network. And if you get a friend request and you've never heard the name before, or you don't recognize them, why not just send them a quick message before accepting them and just say, you know, I don't recognize you. Where have I seen you before? Just kind of, you know, get them to share a bit of background as to why they're asking you to be their friend.
Yeah.
I've done that a few times, and I would certainly encourage people to do it too if they don't know who they are.
I was thinking I would want to sort of establish the rule that your friends on Facebook reflect your existing relationships. You know, like if you already have friendships, then make them your friends on Facebook. But if you don't already have a friendship with somebody, then you're not going to create it by clicking on a box in Facebook, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be another approach, but it seems kind of harsh, actually. And I can imagine kids not just rolling their eyes at that one.
But, no, it's true.
Well, any other little tips and tricks before we wrap up? I really appreciate you coming in. This has been a real insight. It's just an ongoing challenge, I think, for parents, and it must be an ongoing, you know, stress level. I mean, I'm a grandparent now, so most of my kids are all adults. But I'm going to start worrying about my grandson. He's two, and another, you know, and he's spending a lot of time on, mostly on Skype, talking to grandparents.
Oh, yes. Well, that's okay.
But he's very, very, very familiar with the medium. I mean, he knows where to look on the camera, and knows when he's on camera and when he's off camera and stuff. I mean, he's grown up with that, right?
Yeah. Well, kids as young as 3-4 years old are already playing games on the computer online. And a lot of these online games have chat rooms where you can interact with other players. And again, you just never know who you're talking to on the other side.
Yeah. So the golden rule is know who you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
and don't take any risks.
Exactly.
Well, Chrissy, I really appreciate you coming in to give us this foretaste, I guess, of what you're going to be presenting at Yes Women Can on Sunday.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And I wish you a really good presentation on Sunday and also a good visit.
Thank you.
At Yes Women Can, it's going to be a fun event. We're looking forward to it, and it's going to be a fun day.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again. So I'm just going to repeat the URL of the site that Chrissy recommended, cybertip.ca, C-Y-B-E-R-T-I-P, all one word, all lowercase, I imagine, .ca, where not only do they have all sorts of resources for parents who want to keep their kids safe, but also a reporting system for reporting any unusual behavior or suspicious behavior. So a really, really, really good tool that everybody should have posted on their fridge door at home and make your kids aware of as well. So thanks again to Chrissy Duval for coming in today and giving us this talk on this really important topic.